the inaugural episode of Uber Cube, where we're going to talk about all things cube. This is your host, Anthony Adams, a.k.a. Uber Bear, and my co-pilot slash host with the most.
Stu, I don't really have like a moniker or an alternative name to go with, so we'll just go with Stu.
We're going to work on that soon. We'll put a community poll out there. We'll get this kid a name.
Sure. Reach out to us on Twitter.
But anyways, we're going to focus on all things cube over the next forever sessions. We're going to talk about cube theory. We're going to talk about all my passion for cube. I being the cube curator and Stu being the...
the enthusiast player. Come over and draft at my house at 2 o'clock in the morning if you want. I'm always down to get some cube action going. So, yeah.
Constructive and non-constructive feedback.
Yes.
Aficionado.
Yes, passionate feedback.
Why is this card in here? Why would you ever draft this?
Why is this card not in here? You know?
I haven't explained archetypes. It's all the things that every cube curator has to deal with on a regular basis. We're going to jumble that into some episode in the upcoming weeks. What we're going to talk about during this session is how we got into cube, how we met, etc. So I'm going to start out. Like I said, my name is Anthony Adams, a.k.a. Uber Bear. That's a whole story for another time, how I got that name. And Air Force Driven. we'll talk about over drink sometimes, perhaps. I got into Magic the Gathering approximately 1997. I was stationed Mountain Home Air Force Base in the Air Force. My buddy Sean at the time said, "Hey, man, I've got this game I want you to play, Magic the Gathering." So you put these decks out there. And just rumple stomped me, crushed me. I mean, it was borderline miserable. It was, but it was a reprieve from chess, which we were playing at the time with Captain Morgan's on the regular. So it gave us something different. So I got a notion one day to take a walk down the PX. I'd had enough of getting my ass kicked, basically. And I went and bought some packs. I bought me some Tempest, and they had Exodus. They had a Portal intro pack, and at the time, it was Sarah Angels and Shivan Dragons and all the things,
nice,
right?
Nice.
Yeah, man, back when Shivan Dragons were like 40 or 50 bucks. Yeah, and they were doing things. But, yeah, so I put together this Shadow deck, and it crushed his soul. He didn't have any fun.
But you had fun.
I couldn't defend myself, so
I mean, that's what's fun, right? Your fun is the most important. I'm not responsible for
it. It's 100% subjective. Yeah, so turning creature sideways could not block. So still got killed by Sarah Angels. And some other, it was some red legend. We'll talk about that in another episode. But yeah, Stu, you want to tell me a little bit how you got into Magic?
Yeah, I started playing around Theros Block. A buddy of mine in the Canadian military who I went to college with, he was living still in Canada. I had moved since down to the US. He called me up. He said, "Hey, I want to come spend a couple of weeks with yourself and your family and hang out." He brought down a bunch of Magic decks. I don't even know what they were. Maybe Modern at the time. We bought a box, drafted, played, and that was it. I was hooked. And I had a bunch of friends in college who played, but it was just kind of something I looked at them doing while I was on my way to the bar to play pool and drink beer, so I didn't really take a whole lot of interest in it. But yeah, he came down. We played for basically a week straight from 9 o'clock in the morning until 2 a.m. It was just Magic all day and all night. And yeah, started playing some Modern after that. Was really kind of into the turning creatures sideways. So I'll definitely relate to that. Loved me some Stumpy. And then, met the group that I have now with you guys, with yourself and some other people that, you know, maybe we'll see on this podcast at some point. And got into EDH, started playing that pretty exclusively, and then onto Cube, and have absolutely been in love with Cube for the first second that I ever got to understand the concept and the logistics that go behind it, the design.
So much logistics.
It's incredible. It's like take building a deck and multiply it by 1,000 times your time and your wallet. Yeah. But yeah, just incredible that just the creativity and, you know, even the more common archetype or the more common like cube types, right? So the vintage cube is probably the most common, what most people will know of through Modo. You know, just as I more got into it and see, you know, the creativity that so many people have just with a vintage cube is amazing. And then with obviously yourself, Anthony, I will say is not just a curator, he is a designer, an enthusiast, extremely passionate.
Obsessive.
About, yeah, I'll go with that. Obsessive about, you know, cube in general, but certainly the cubes that you've built that we've got to have the enjoyment of playing with during our time as friends and playing with the group. So
I've got a partner in crime. His name's Chris Moore. He'll show up on a later episode. And as I said, I was in the Air Force when I started playing Magic. After the military time, contract ended, my passion for Magic, 60-card repetitive four-ofs, it dried up. I just didn't have the fascination in it any longer. So I just had a box of cards. I mean, just sitting around with Wastelands, etc., just doing nothing for years, probably 12 years. So I missed, good God, a large amount of blocks. Mm-hmm. I want to say some approximation about Innistrad time period.
Okay.
I got to chatting with Chris Moore, met him while we were living outside the Raleigh area and just started chatting it up one day about our passion for Magic. And we, I don't know, we just we hit it off immediately and started talking about Commander, this mm-hmm. format.
Mm-hmm.
Good God, our Commander decks are bad. But it kind of grew into the evolution of, I think Chris was the, he was the first one to make a real cube. You know, I'm a curator. I have five cubes, but there's probably seven of them in my history, two of which were just total debacles. The first one was Pauper Boxo cards. And we'll talk about that in a later episode where we go into Pauper and extent and how Chris Moore has perfected that science.
Yes.
But he actually wanted to build it to show me how bad mine was. And he'll tell that story. But I wanted to have an identity. He started building a power cube. And for me, being completely honest, it didn't have an identity that focused on me. So I started brainstorming an idea, which how my horror cube, Uber Bear's horror cube, has come about. And that started it and thought I'd be one and done. And then there was a power cube, a 540 vintage. And probably timelining this, there was an artifact cube that's 360, which is pretty nuts. And there is a 480 two-headed giant cube that focuses on squirrel aristocrats and polymorph. It's insane. We're going to talk about it in another episode.
Yes.
And then I like to say it's my piece de la resistance, is my Fem cube, which is a complete focus on genders, all female orientation in the magic world. The art's all, exception for the duels and et cetera. Everything I focus on is female. And those have been focused on in a couple of YouTube videos, which we'll talk about shortly. But in a nutshell, man, I am a cube nut job. Even today, I was tweaking my cubes. Horror cube, not good enough. Fem cube, not good enough. As I said, these guys are both my constructive criticism team and deconstructive criticism team. Why are you running werewolves in your horror cube? They're terrible. Guess what? They're not anymore.
Good. Glad to hear, finally.
Yeah, so that's pretty much our introductory piece. One of the things we're going to do here in the next few minutes, that we're both not only Magic the Gathering cube aficionados lovers, but we also like libations and drinks. And
we sure do.
Yeah, man. I'm a craft beer guy. I brew. Mm-hmm. Got a jalapeno pale ale right now that's pretty dope. And my buddy here, he has found a passion for what?
Scotch. I say found a passion for scotch. I think that's kind of been around for a long time. But I will scotch, pride guys. Myself. I will challenge anybody's old-fashioned. I love me an old-fashioned cocktail.
Only because I got him to put Luxardo cherries in it. A next level
the
kids.
Those Luxardo cherries do make a difference.
So one of the things we're going to do during our pod is we're going to feature a drink of choice for the pod, which we'll be moving on to very shortly. But that simply concludes our introductions to one another. Hope to hear you guys. We're going to give you all of our how to reach us info shortly, etc. Anything else?
No, let's keep going.
Let's get to the topic. All right, so as we said, we are beer, scotch, and everything aficionado. So before we get going, we're going to enjoy some of our local finest, Oak City Brewing Company. I'm having their Georgia Pine New England IPA.
Very nice. I have an Ambrosia Amber Ale, and I'm going to give this one a little try right here.
Yeah, we're only doing this to loosen the conversation up a little bit.
And that is delicious. And I do love me.
All right, now we're going to move on our topic.
All right, so topic, this is episode number one. Mm-hmm. And the topic that we've chosen for this is, the swords.
The swords of fallen favor.
The swords of fallen favor, as we are going to label this episode. So, a bit of history. 2004, Darksteel. We see two swords, one of them which I would arguably say is the most defining, the most iconic, which is Sword of Fire and Ice, aka Sofa.
Yep, yep.
Protection from red and blue, gets +2/+2. When it deals combat damage to a player, deals 2 damage to any target and draw a card. So, I don't know about yourself, but I could probably speak for a lot of people when I say any effect that allows me to draw a card as a repeatable effect, I'm in.
I personally don't like drawing cards, so yeah.
That's fine. I'll do the broken stuff then. Thank you. And the second one, Sword of Light and Shadow, +2/+2, protection from white and black. When it deals combat damage to a player, you gain 3 life and return up to 1 target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. So pretty powerful effect. I would say, relatively.
I can see it fun and terrible. In the
not terrible, yeah. If you've got some kind of, you know, repeatable effect. But certainly I would say that Sword of Fire and Ice is kind of the cream of the crop of those two.
Sure.
So Scars of Mirrodin, 2010, we see Sword of Body and Mind, +2/+2, pro green and blue. Combat damage to a player, create a 2/2 green wolf creature token, and that player mills 10 cards.
Did you say mill? Everybody loves mill. It's so much fun.
It is. I'm so glad that it's evergreen now. I don't know why people
just mill.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. It's just keep putting cards from your library into your graveyard.
Yeah, why not?
Everybody loves to do that. And then Mirrodin Besieged, a new Phyrexia. We see Sword of War and Peace. I'm not going to read all the effects out.
No.
It's Sword of War and Peace, Sword of Feast and Famine. Modern Horizons from June 2019 saw... Mirrodin Besieged, 2011, we see the introduction of Sword of War and Peace, followed by New Phyrexia. Also in 2011, we see Sword of Feast and Famine. And then we see Modern Horizons in 2019 giving us Sinew and Steel and Truth and Justice. And finally, in the Modern Horizons 2 in 2021, we see Sword of Hearth and Home. And that completes the cycle.
Yes. So why have we named this episode Swords of Fallen Favor? Well, there's been a trend in the Cube community. I follow a lot of Reddit posts. I stay on a lot of Cube discussion blogs, etc. Mm-hmm. And I myself am a firm believer in this. Protection in itself can be just unfun. I mean, it makes games divisive. So part of the reason why, in this case, for my 540 Vintage Cube, is I like to run these type of cards because they're powerful, but at the cost of fun, do I really want to do that, right? I mean...
Yeah, I would agree. And I think another kind of understated aspect of the whole protection thing, right? And maybe you could sort of draw parallels between the protection, even if it's from specific colors, with certain other mechanics that certainly through the years, I don't think have completely been, you know, fallen foul of the community. But I'll go, for example, with Hexproof and Shroud, because those two effects, they provide something, they provide an effect that really, if you want to sort of be honest about it, fundamentally is against and I kind of hate to use this, but the spirit of magic, which is interaction.
Interaction, right?
And
yes.
Anything that prevents interaction, which is organically going to happen during a game, there's going to be some detractors.
It diminishes the experience.
Precisely.
Whereas if this was, say, Sword of Hearth and Home and give creature Ward 4...
Interesting new mechanic that's been introduced very recently.
Then we could actually have some interaction.
And, yeah.
And while I want to do the most broken things in my 540, I do have limitations. So, yeah, I'm running Oko and Baby Teferi and Channel. I mean, it's not like I'm not being egregious, but something about the swords, not only do they feel sideboardish at times, because the matchup is matchup dependent, right?
Correct.
I mean, yeah, the swords are powerful in the effects, and they do something, oh, interesting. If you're playing against a Rakdos deck and you're busting out your Sword of Hearth and Home, which is not Green the white. Best one, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I mean, what value add are you really getting anyways?
Exactly. Unless, I suppose the counter argument would be, unless the on hit effect is something that just provides such great synergy with the deck that you have, then sure. Unless the effect is something that just synergizes so well with the rest of the deck that you've built, then okay, understandable. Or just the effect that it provides is so powerful, right? And we'll go back to Sophie. Drawing cards is never a bad effect. But do right. I want to spend the cost of the mana to put the sword on the battlefield and then the equip cost? So unless the effect is something that's so strong that it just synergizes with the rest of the deck that you're building, sure. Again, Sophie draws cards, always a great thing.
Sure.
You know, it doesn't matter what the deck you're building. If you're drawing cards, you're doing good things. But otherwise, the protection I'm not worried about, +2/+2 is an okay effect, but it's not great.
Now, it's important to note that your cube is your cube, it's your expression, mm-hmm. right? For me personally as a curator, I've decided to break symmetry. I don't want to run a full cycle of these swords. I've seen people who do, and I respect it.
Mm-hmm.
But for me as a curator with my 540 vintage cube, I've actually trimmed it down to only two. I'm currently running the Sword of Fire and Ice,
yep.
and I'm running the Sword of Feast and Famine. Now, the reason why I'm running these is both the functions they play mm-hmm. in my cube have, well, they have archetypal crossover things that I can do with them. For example, the Sophie, as we discussed, I mean, it's going to net you a card and it's going to hit a creature. I mean, it's just powerful in itself.
Yep.
I mean, if I had to just choose one and only one, that would be it 100%.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, oh yeah. And then Feast and Famine, I guess my big driver is the hand disruption. I love hand disruption. I'm a mm-hmm. stacks player. It just cohesives or has cohesion with what I do as an archetypal builder. I'm all about the stacks. I like disruption. I like, you know, all this misery that I'm telling you guys to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all about it, man. But, you know, to each their own. Personally, those are the only two I'm going to run, and now we're going to move on to what would be some of the archetypal drivers.
So, obviously, any equipment-driven archetype in a cube, right? So, even moving away from the vintage cube, any kind of specialized cube, you know, everybody loves some Stoneforge Mystic.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody loves, you know, putting artifacts into play for cheap, putting equipment onto the battlefield for cheap. Yeah, I could definitely see some argument that it would be useful there. Would that mean I would want to play all of them? Maybe not. Do I think that I would be limited to just Sword of Fire and Ice and Sword of Feast and Famine and Sword of...
Fire and Ice?
So, yeah, Sword of Feast and Famine and possibly Sword of Truth and Justice. I actually like the proliferate and possibly in some kind of Super Friends environment, question mark. I could see the value in it. The problem for me is once you start opening up like, oh, that's great in a Super Friends. Yeah, sure. But then if you've got Super Friends archetype, then Sinew and Steel makes sense because that destroys Planeswalkers. And then it's like, okay, do I want to start adding another sword to combat another sword?
And how many creatures do you run in Super Friends?
Exactly.
I mean, sure, yeah. Gideon. Okay, we could argue.
You could.
But
anything that proliferates, I think, would be strong in any kind of Super Friends.
Back to Stoneforge Mystic and how she makes these playable. I mean, frankly, these cost 3 and 2 to equip.
Right.
Aside from the effect you get in a typical vintage environment, which as time has progressed, things have simply become more efficient.
They have.
Right? I mean, I can look at the just linear progression from when I first built my cube, trying to match the online vintage cube, and how interaction has just ticked down so much that people want one drops, two drops.
Yeah.
The play is fast, man.
Yes, it is.
To have the time to take off and pay 5 to do the thing.
You're not doing it. You're not even fetching it. And here's the thing. You're not fetching it with Stoneforge Mystic. You're not fetching it before Batterskull. You're not fetching it before Umezawa's Jitte. You're not fetching it before, which is, you know, this is 2022 now. We have Cauldra Complete.
Yeah,
I think it's called Cauldra Complete. Yep. Pronunciation is not a strength of
now, mine. That's a 7 drop. I don't 100% agree. But
that is a 7 drop.
But Stoneforge does cut it down.
But Stoneforge will fetch that, and you can put it down.
And it's going to do work.
And it's going to do work.
And
so,
you know what? More fun, at least for me.
Much more fun.
And I told you I don't like
face
fun.
With a huge piece of equipment like that, I'm enjoying myself.
Fun subjective. But
very much.
We're going to kind of progress into, we've ranked the swords, and this is all 100% personal opinion. I wrote this list up, and I'm going to kind of read it off, and it's just, I don't know, my feelings on the matter. So anyways, we've got, how would I rank them? My list, and I'm going to ask Stu if he aligns. So number 1, which I run, the Sword of Fire and Ice.
Yes.
Number 2, Sword of Feast and Famine.
Agreed.
Number 3, Sword of Body and Mind Grown, but I can't argue that it's not ridiculously powerful. I mean, you only got 40 cards, dude. I mean, we're gonna take a quarter of them.
I'm not arguing.
It's awful.
I'm not arguing.
All right. Sword of Sinew and Steel. Get some moxes. Get them signets. Blow them up. I can argue.
The
Sword of Light and Shadow. I like creature recursion. It's fun. Sword of War and Peace to me didn't have a great deal of function because they have to have a hand. And as we talked about, these cubes have progressively become more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
People are evacuating their hands faster now.
Yes, they are.
I know you want to keep 7. I know you do. But
I like to have 7.
You like to get them plays down,
I want
right?
to get them out.
You got those 6 lands and that 1 playable holding back. You're bluffing. All right. And then we got the Sword of Truth and Justice. And that's a proliferation style. And I can see that functioning like an Emma Handy's proliferation cube or my 2-headed giant cube where I copied her style and I have a proliferation mechanic. But I chose not to run it because it's all about the fun. And then Sword of Hearth and Home, EDH at best in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think Truth and Justice could find a home a little further up the list. I think it's not great. It's not terrible. It could be 6th place. We're at the point where we're arguing the 6th or 7th best sword out of the 8 swords, when we're not going to talk about Sword of Dungeons and Dragons.
Well, yeah, it's an honorable mention. I don't run uncards.
All right, we'll honorably mention it, but that's probably where the conversation ends. I think you could make an argument depending on the archetypes that you're running, and I think that's more specialty cube driven rather than a more traditional vintage cube list driven. But yeah, I think you could see that a place or two above. But I would agree. First of all, Sophie and Feast of Famine, those two belong at the top of the list without any question.
So there's 8 current swords, right? Mm-hmm. So that's 8 slots of real estate. I'm only running 2. So I had 6 slots. So what's the community replacing it with? What has taken the spot?
Well, here's what just this.
Yeah.
Okay. As mentioned earlier, number 1, going for your traditional Stoneforge Mystic lines. First one I'm getting is Batterskull. I think you could probably play 500 rounds through Vintage Cube if you draft that archetype where you've got Stoneforge Mystic and you're looking to get something out on the battlefield as soon as possible, you're putting Batterskull out there. I love Umezawa's Jitte, which I'm going to pivot to next. I think, subjectively, Umezawa's Jitte is the most powerful equipment
Well,
that's ever printed. Like, definitely make an argument for Skull Clamp. Sure. I love... look, I play in any deck with 1/1s. If you have 1/1s in the deck, you can put...
if you're running a non-classical cube, if you're going outside the vintage... well, we're going to vintage, but we're going to go a little crazy. We're going to start making a cube that breaks the borders.
It's Jutai.
Yep.
It's still Jutai. It's absolutely
you got to ask yourself, what am I not going to put in my fun cube? I'm not going to put a Jutai in there because it's going to break the environment.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's...
people have to learn the hard way. People have to learn the hard way. That card is busted.
Yes, it is. I love it. Oh, so much.
So, as we mentioned, we've got Uzaz Jutai, we've got Batterskull. So, we're taking up this real estate. Well, as I mentioned before, and our next card is Eater of Virtue equals Keyword Soup. Now, this card is a Bone Splitter variant.
Sweetheart.
And the only thing that could be cashed in as a downside of the card is it says it exiles. But...
I think it has to.
Yeah.
It kind of has to do that. Yes.
Yeah, Bone Splitter by itself. Now, Stu, you have some thoughts on Bone Splitter in a vintage environment?
Yeah, I'm going to say that's a no for me. I appreciate the low to the ground. It's cheap. It's cheap to cast. Yeah. It's cheap to equip. Yeah. It's still not good enough for me.
Until I kill him with a Bone Splitter tied on to Thalia. But we'll talk about that. It's a personal opinion, I suppose.
I'm never going to agree with
that. That white leany deck, low to the ground, or that mono red with a Bone Splitter.
It can't work. It can't work for me.
GG's.
I'm not trying to cast non-creature spells if I'm going mono white.
We will F6 that later.
Unless it's Path to Exile or Swords to Plowshares.
Fair enough. I'm trying. Now, Eater of Virtue. It has the same equipment cost, as mentioned, as Bone Splitter, which is... cast for one, equip for one, and at a base stat, it gives +2 to your creature. And that doesn't just have to be aggro. This card, when the creature dies, as I mentioned, it exiles. But then it gives the properties to the next creature equip of the one that had it before, which is Keyword Soup. I mean, that's everything from protection... menace, death touch, vigilance, indestructible,
flying trample, life
trample, it's flying spaghetti monsters. What you're making here. If you load this thing up and just keep belligerently attacking with it, I mean, people are going to beg for mercy because this creature is going to be out of control.
It's pretty cool. Like anything that is kind of word soup like that, where you've got the ability to just add a ton of keywords onto a creature. Sure, it's. To me, it's much more of a
fun-driven
card than it is. If you could somehow put together an archetype in a cube where you have a bunch of creatures that you can sacrifice with a ton of different keywords and keep attaching Eater of Virtue, which is not outside the realm of possibility. It's only one to equip. So sure, that might be a fun card.
It's vintage. It's vintage. But we'll get you there. Let's go to our next card, Heirloom Blade. Now, this card, and let me reel back, Eater of Virtue are both in my horror cube.
Sure.
Because of thematic purposes, but they're also both in my vintage cube. Heirloom Blade, while it costs 3 to cast, 3 colorless, and 1 to equip, it does give the creature +3 and +1 on defense, which is... it just makes another monster. Sure. Let's put that on some Thalia again, or the new Doggo card, or Thraben Inspector. I mean...
I can see it, absolutely. I mean, anything sort of tribal-related, if I'm trying to... we talked about with the vampires, right? It makes a lot of sense with vampires. I want to stick it on, you know, certainly with tokens are perfect. I just want to start swinging with tokens, move it over to another token. I can block with it. I can lose that creature to go and get another vampire to cast next turn, something like that. Then, and you know what? 3/1, if you're getting 4 power out of a creature, that's pretty serious.
Yeah, at the end of the day, like in my horror cube, like he was mentioning, it just flops over the next thing. So you have 0 Fs given about attacking in, because you're going to flop over that next creature. Now, the one downside is, for argument's sake, and some people will say this, is that you do potentially give your opponent information on your deck, right? Your construction, you want to hide cards. So, because when this card when the creature dies, you start rolling over cards until you hit one that has a similar type. Where this would best fit is like in a humans deck, for example, or in a tribal synergy in my horror environment. I mean, zombies, werewolves, spirits, which is disgusting, by the way. All the things. I mean, changelings. It can go bananas.
Changelings would be pretty disgusting. I agree with that. And yeah, I'm less concerned with showing information if I'm playing a tribal deck than I am if maybe I'm playing a combo deck or a control deck, and I don't want you to know that I've got a Force of Will up or something like that. So I'm not going to be as worried that you know that I've got, you know, a vampire sure. coming off.
There's minor downside to this card.
I'm not worried about it.
And the thing about this card is it wasn't first really recognized by the community. In truth, I don't know who was the one that did the article saying, hey guys, but this card's real. It's real. If you don't have it in your cube environment, I highly recommend you adding it.
I would agree.
It replaces itself.
Anything with any kind of tribal support is going to see value out of this card.
Yeah. In a typical vintage environment, you've got humans incidentally lying around. You'd be shocked and amazed how many humans are there. So we've got a couple other equipment cards that we haven't added that I have added to my vintage environment and others. So I'll kind of go through them and where I place them. And these, again, are just in there for the fun factor. So Blade of Oni is a card that I've recently added to my Power Cube and my Artifact Cube. And you know what? Based on that alternate art, I'm probably going to slot it in my Horror Cube just because the art is sick.
It's almost too strong.
So
that's how, for something where you've got, you know, it's not vintage power level, or at least you're not, you know. But there's two things that I think, specifically from an evasion, right? I love evasion. Flying wins games, right?
Correct.
Menace.
It's
I don't know if Menace is really talked about enough, but Menace, to me, is absolutely disgusting.
Used to be key sentence cannot be blocked by two or more creatures. Yeah, that's a sexy way of saying it.
Yeah, so now you got a 5/5 coming in. There's a lot of creatures that I don't want to put in front of a big beefy 5/5. I don't want to put my, you know, my Barb. I don't want to put, you know, Thalia or something like that in front of a 5/5. They're going to go down real quick. So yeah,
so that Blade of Oni is really strong. What makes it so fascinating? It costs one black, one colorless to cast. It produces a 3/1, and it essentially is a 3/1 menace. But then it has reconfigure. Reconfigure is two black and two colorless, and you can attach it to a creature. When you do that, you've now made a 5/5 creature with menace that's a black demon. So that does fall into some tribal synergies for certain people.
Yep.
And as we progress with cards being released, it will have more and more, you know, advantages.
I like it. I don't know if it's vintage power level, but tribal, wonderful.
It is for me. And I run this in two, potentially three cubes. This card is a beater.
Horror, yes.
Yes.
Vintage, we'll talk about it. Okay, so the second one, Shadow Spear. This is, to me, this is ridiculous. 1/1 trample lifelink, or +1/+1, I should say, trample lifelink. Pay 1, permanence your opponent's control, lose hexproof and indestructible, and end of turn, equip 2. I'm not going to lie, I'm in love with it. +1/+1 is a kind of bit of a gravy. Trample and lifelink with... It just gives some nice stats, but lose hexproof, lose indestructible. I dig it.
It has niche corner case functions.
I dig it.
For me personally, I only run this in my horror cube. I only run it because, again, the word shadow, spooky, scary. So yeah, it's a horror genre.
I agree. It's kind of got some like H.G. Wells, War of the Worlds art kind of going on, which I'm about as well.
Yeah. So. For me, I don't run this in my 540 powered vintage cube for real estate reasons. I could see running this at 630 or 720 exceptionally comfortably.
I think it would need some support, but I would agree.
That one permanence opponent's control, lose hexproof and indestructible, that kills primo creatures, or excuse me, doesn't kill them, but it disarms cards like Carnage Tyrant, which is a menace. When you start getting that top tier of that mono green. So I can see some positive function on that.
I agree. like you say, I don't think it would find support in a shorter list vintage cube. Expanded potentially, but I very much like it on a theme cube. I think for the horror cube, it's perfect.
Yeah, the only thing that's really going for it's a negative strike is that +1/+1. If that had been +2, this card would be in every list.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. Especially only, cast one, equip two for +2/+2 and trample and lifelink. Yeah. That might be a little.
It just comes down to that timing issue of these highly efficient cubes. Mm-hmm. I got to outrun the control player. I'm turning my white weenie, red aggro, whatever you got, gruel aggro sideways, mm-hmm. and I don't have time to ping for an additional +1. I mean, that's, for me personally, but in my horror cube, it's a little slower, not AB, I'm AB dueling it, but I'm intentionally took the environment down a notch.
Yeah.
So that, you're not dealing with the channels and whatnots.
I agree, but I think there's definitely plenty of homes for this card. All right, so last one that I'd like to talk about is Embercleave. This is 4 colorless, 2 red. It has flash, costs 1 colorless less to cast for each attacking creature you control. When it enters the battlefield, attach it to target creature you control, gets +1/+1, and has double strike and trample, otherwise equip 3. I like the fact that, the flash obviously is necessary for the cost one less to cast for each attacking creature. So right. I kind of think those two, they thematically, they work nicely together. Attach it target creature you control, again, kind of has to have something like that. I think, honestly, for 4 colorless, 2 red, even with all of that, maybe it's a little underwhelming in the stats. I think double strike and trample is nice. +1/+1 is nice. It's just okay. To me, I know that you've said that you like this card and that it's seen presence in some lists. I think if I pulled it in a pack, I would say, you know what? Yeah, I can see why someone would include this card in a list. Would I run it? I don't think so. I'm from a mono red perspective, I'm trying to be super fast, super low to the ground. And generally, unless I get some crazy support for it, like, maybe I run Young Pyromancer and some other red token generators, I might consider running it, but it's kind of borderline for
me. I can see it as a finisher / combat trick.
It's a win more.
It's a win more card, 100%. I do run this in my artifact cube, mm-hmm. just for thematic purposes, because I'm making servos and thopters, and I have a lot of token generation, so it can make for a gotcha less win more-ish card there, yeah. But in a powered traditional vintage cube, and in my case a 540, while this card is sexy, checks a lot of boxes for
lots
me,
of text.
It's restrictive in the definitely the double pip of the 2 red.
Yep.
So it gets very narrow on the decks that are just dying to grab onto it. If it had mm-hmm. been 1 red, I could see this being more versatile.
Yeah.
But mono red might grab this as a finisher, but they're also kind of suicide-ish as far as suicide black. They're going deep and they don't have time to take off this. I'd rather have a bolt. I'd rather have an incinerate. I just want to go to the face.
Yes, yes. Right? There's a lot of, I'd rather have the burn cards. I'd rather have the punishing, creature cards like Goblin Guide or, like I say, Monastery Swift Spear.
Yeah.
Anything that's either coming down quick and fast and hitting hard or is providing a little bit of incremental value like Young Pyromancer.
Could this make for a memorable experience? I just crushed your face. Sure. Yeah, I mean, It goes hard.
I think it would, because you might be one of like 10 people on Earth that drafted this card and then killed a player with it. So yeah,
I wouldn't fault you if I saw this in your list. I might even go a little crazy and do it, but it would not be packed. It'd be my pick 23.
Yeah, agreed. And, maybe you pick it up and throw it in just again. Not everything has to be hyper competitive. Sometimes I'm trying to do something for fun. And if I'm trying to have fun, I can see this being something I want to pick up. And like, you know what? If I come out of an evening of cube drafting and I've done nothing that night, I've gone 0-6, but I killed that one guy that one round with Embercleave.
Then you got something to talk about.
I got something to talk about.
Yeah. So it's a gacha card. And you're like, this card is a memory.
Yeah. I got him down to 1 life with burn and then I killed him with Embercleave. I'm
Take
happy
that.
About it. Take that. That's right. Lunch Let's tomorrow. So here's what we came up with as a kind of little fun activity for anyone who would like to partake and has listened to this podcast. We'd like to issue you a challenge.
And the challenge is going to be, we have 8 swords of a potential 10, so the suite is incomplete. So we're currently missing both a Gruul and a Dimir card.
Mm-hmm.
So we were kind of brainstorming on what those would look like. Obviously, the Gruul would be +2/+2, pro-green, pro-red, blank. What would you like to see?
And if you're doing something like blowing up lands, you're instantly going to get my vote. Anthony knows how I like to play Magic.
Yeah, spot LD. That would be fantastic now that you've said that.
I know, I'm giving away ideas for free, but
yeah. Like, you know, target non-basic. You gotta curtail it a little bit.
We're
not going to give you the other one. And then the other one's going to be the Dimir one.
Yep.
And I have some ideas, but I'm not going to share them. I'm curious, because we're going to leave you some links and some emails and Twitters you can get. And I'm curious to see some community feedback. But the Dimir one would be +2/+2, pro-black, pro-blue, and does blank. What would you like to see? We're just kind of having a little fun exercise here.
Yep.
And try to be a Wizards of the Coast designer. Put your Morrow brain on. Don't go Magical Christmas Land too much. Let's pretend like this could be a real card that could be printed. Let's see what kind of feedback.
A real card from maybe, you know, 2015 or.
And we will share once we receive this information on what we've received the community on the 2 imaginary swords that have now been constructed and designed, and then we're going to share what we thought they should have.
Yep.
I think it's just a fun exercise.
Yep, I agree. I'm excited to see what we get.
So this summarizes the points that we're trying to make about the Swords of the Unfavorable. It's not that they're not great. It's not that you shouldn't run them. It's, well, frankly, it's my personal choice as a cube curator to pick and choose which ones I want to include in my environments that result in both powerful, fun, and efficient plays. I've just decided to crop it down to 2. A good friend of mine has now cropped it down to 1. I mean, or you can run the entire suite. If you like that full cycle, you like going deep on the idea, I can respect that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to give a few shout-outs before we get rolling. Mm-hmm. 1 to Oak City Brewing Company for making the absolutely delightful beers that we've had this evening. They're located in Knightdale, North Carolina. I'm sure that's not a typical jaunt for most people, but if you want to hop on an airplane and you're looking for an amazing place to hang out and have a wonderful just Sunday afternoon watching dogs run around, throwing some frisbee and kicking it back with a food truck, Oak City Brewing Company, Knightdale, North Carolina. I think that's our place to go, man. That's our family spot.
That's my local.
Yeah. That's our local. We throw down some magic there. We drink some beers, get some sunshine. We love the place. Yeah. We're all about drinking that local. I'd like to throw another shout out to MTG Cube Tuber, Jordan Eckenrode. This young man's been knocking out some brilliant content. Where he sits down and he does cube evaluations on uniquely designed and curated cubes. He drafts them, gives feedback. He's done a couple of mine. Some of the videos can be found at Cube Cobra. Just crushing the game with some really great work.
Great content.
His content's really great.
His content is great content.
He did my Femme Fatale cube, man. Yep. A little intimidating, frankly. I mean, the production value on that doesn't make you want to just go in and start out. Like, wow. But yeah, man, shout out to Jordan and all the work he's doing. Another thing is I will be at KubeCon in October, as will a couple of my friends, and I will be hosting. I will be bringing quite a few of my cubes to the free play area, hoping to get some of them nominated for featured cubes. I've put in my Artifact Cube and my Femme Fatale, which are 2 of my unique cubes that do not have proxies. That's a requirement of KubeCon.
Yep.
The KubeCon is going to be a celebration of all things cube, man. I am hype about it. It's going to be in Madison, Wisconsin, and all the big names are going to be there in the cube community. So I'm psyched. I've already got my rental car down, and I'm getting my hotel soon. I'm getting on that. As far as that, Stu's going to give us all of the contact information.
Yeah, if you like the content, want to reach out to us, give us a shout out, or ask any questions about any of the contests, you can find us at Twitter at UberCubeMTGPod. You can also reach us at email via UberCubeMTGPodcast@gmail.com. And if you're interested in discussing anything cube related or even magic related on Discord, pack one, pick one,
alters,
alter, anything magic related, then hit us up on Discord. We got a link in the Twitter description, and we'd love to engage with the community and talk about the wonderful thing that is cube and anything else, beer or you know, anything else that's fun and and you know, magic related.
Hit me up on that how to brew while playing magic. I hope you guys enjoyed the pod, man. This has been fun as hell to make, and we're gonna have some more content rolling out very soon.
Yep, we hope to catch you guys on the next one. Thank you for listening.
Peace out.